so we'll jump a little bit. This really leads to the next mitzvah. Next mitzvah. There's a mitzvah that says, right, the mitzvah to judge favorably. Right? Give the benefit of the doubt. Our sages teach, what's the greatest way to have to have healthy interactions and to have, you know, have shalom and to, and also to not be aggrieved or insulted by insults is to give the benefit of the doubt. So what does that mean? How is benefit of the doubt? How does this all connect? So I want to give you the following mnemonic. The following mnemonic, which to me is very useful. The mnemonic is grief. Somebody gives you grief. Think of this mnemonic, G-R-I-E-F, 5 steps. How to process that grief. It's all connected to these mitzvahs. let's just go backwards. We'll start with F. Right? So F stands for rest against you. So right, let's say I'm at a store, I'm at a you know, Giants or whatever, and the clerk is rude, very rude to me. Clerk is rude to me. Is not friendly, is rude to me. So I can get insulted. F stands for favorably. F stands for to judge favorably, right? Right. If the person says that was clearly rude or unpleasant, so there's mitzvah. You know, maybe judge favorably. Is there something? Maybe there's a bigger context over here, right? Maybe the person is having a hard day. Right? Maybe the person has a very annoying boss. Maybe the person has a sick child. Realize it's not me. I did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. Right. Rather than take it personally, realize that it's that there may be something bigger to the story, and the reason why they're acting that way, the reason why I'm saying this is because there's something going on, and that rather than take it personally, right, try to judge favorably. There must be a reason for this. That's F. E, and this is really the most important thing. E stands for esteem, which related to self-esteem. So what does that mean? So our sages teach, and I mentioned this last time. Sages teach, every person is commanded to say, B'shili Nivra Olam. Every person is commanded to say that it would have been worthwhile to create the whole entire universe, right, just for one person. Right? That a person is commanded to say that my mitzvos, what I accomplish, the holiness that I bring into the world, my relationship with Hashem, is so spiritually significant that Hashem says, I would have been worthwhile to create the whole entire universe, all the fish, all the animals, all the trees, right? All the galaxies, all the different levels of the universe, just for one person, right? No. Why is that important? Because when a person realizes that they are spiritually significant, so a person has this inherent sense of, again, this inherent sense of spiritual greatness, we'll see that they're able to overcome so many of these negative encounters. You see, because we are so spiritually great, because we are created in the same way, we're created in God's image, the most fundamental argument that our Yetzer Hara has, it says, you're not worthy of love, you're not worthy of respect, you can't accomplish anything, you have no talent. Our Yetzer Hara, a negative impulse, tells us all the time, we're worthless. And again, because we are so spiritually great, we are so enormously powerful, right? The most fundamental argument our Yetzer Hara says is that you're nothing. And that we hear that voice, that's our inner critic. You know, we often in our mind chatter, we often hear that voice, that I'm not worthy of love, I'm not worthy of respect, and that really comes from our Yetzer Hara, comes from our negative impulse. The times when a person says something that's rude or insulting or demeans us, or a person doesn't respect us, we think, you know what? Maybe that voice inside of me, maybe it's right. Maybe I am not worthy of love. Maybe I'm not worthy of respect. Right? So the reason why it's so painful is because we think, you know, maybe it's true. Maybe I am worthless, right? So, but a person realizes that no, I am inherently spiritually great. B'shvili Nivra Olam, I am great. I am spiritually great. I have this. There's no potential. A person reviews themselves every single day. B'shvili Nivra Olam. I say this again. We're commanded to say that to ourselves. We're commanded to review it again and again and again. I am spiritually great, right? So therefore, those insults don't bother us, right? Okay, the person thinks that I'm overweight. Okay. You think, right? I like myself, right? I like my esteem, right? The word self-esteem doesn't just mean, see, often people like themselves because people will tell them you're nice, you're good, you're people will like themselves because of based on an external factor. But self-esteem means to have an esteem based on yourself, right? To be a self-generated self-esteem, a self-generated esteem. So therefore, if our esteem doesn't come from an external source, it comes from our own sense of our spiritual greatness, then we're able to become really to create this. Like this force field around us that we don't let other people say pull us down, because we know we are great. We should never all. We know we're great. And the more we review that, we just level of not let things get to heart. So there's a famous quote from Eleanor Roosevelt, famous quote, but it's really this idea. She said, "Nobody can make you feel inferior without your permission." Right? Nobody can make you feel inferior without your permission. Meaning. That if we recognize our greatness, then who cares what people say? It doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference. That's their opinion. I know that I'm great. It only makes a difference if I think maybe they're right. I know they're not right. I know that I'm great. So therefore, that's what this verse is saying. This verse is saying, right? Reach a level where we are emotionally healthy. It doesn't bother us. It bounces right off. Right? It doesn't go into our heart because we like ourselves. Right, so again, back to grief. Right, so again, F is favorably. Right, E stands for have self-esteem. I stands I should be related to F, but it's different. I means don't interpret. Very often, like for example, my story of my friend's after had the baby. I interpreted their words. I interpreted he means he said you should get exercise. Therefore, he means to insult me. But I'm just reading into it. Right, often when a person looks at us and we look at them, we smile at them, and they don't respond, or they don't smile back, or they have a grumpy face towards us, or they use a loud tone of voice. Or all the myriad of examples that make us feel insulted a little bit, right? We're reading into something, reading into their face, reading into their tone of voice, reading into the lack of response. Maybe they're just distracted. Maybe they think something else. Maybe they're just tired from something else. Don't read into it. Don't interrupt. Don't.
Interrupt.
What was that?
Interrupt.
Right. Don't interpret. Right, don't read into things. Don't read into things. Right? Yeah, so meaning, empathy is very important. Empathy means to try to feel their emotions, but you can't read their minds. Empathy doesn't mean to read their minds. Don't try to interpret what they're thinking. You can't interpret what they're thinking. You can interpret how they're feeling. You can't interpret how they're thinking. You can sense that they're distressed or they're upset. You don't know why they're upset, right? Don't interpret it. Right? So that's I. Right, so again, R, this is very important, and this is related to this thing. So much, right, when a person insults us, when a person, says something that's rude, the encounter may be 1 second, maybe in 2 seconds, right? The person says something mean to us. But you know why it's painful? Because we replay that in our minds over and over and over again, over and over again, right? My wife, just quote to me a great quote. It says, "Do you have a bad day yesterday, or was it simply a bad 5 minutes that you milked throughout the rest of the day?" Right. The point is that when a person says something that's rude to us, the counter is a second. But you know why it's painful? Because we shoot ourselves in the foot again and again and again by choosing to replay it. Right. We create this feedback loop in our heads. Now we have the ability to control our thoughts. Right? There's something called the law of substitution, which means it's a psychological term, which means that you can only think of one thing at once. Only one thing at once. You can't think of two things. So therefore, if you're thinking of that insult, it's because you're not thinking of anything else. If you therefore consciously choose to think of another thing, choose instead to think, "I like myself," or choose think of think something that's constructive. Say have a positive affirmation that I say to say, or anything that's constructive. Choose to think of something else. You can't think of two things at once. So the point is that we consciously realize that we're repeating in our head, we're taking it to heart again and again and again and again and again and again, and we're violating this prohibition. We have the ability to control that. We have the ability, instead of to change a channel, to change a frequency, and to think of something else. So that's R. Repeat. So grief is, right? So F is favorably, E is esteem, I is interprets, now R is repeat, G stands for Gamzul Tova, right? Martin Seligman, who was is a Jewish fellow, who was one of the founders of positive psychology, he in one of his articles I read, he wrote that when we when we're optimistic, we have an optimistic reframe in our mind. We actually release, hormones of well-being, endorphins and oxytocin. We release them in our brain. We actually release into our bloodstream hormones that make us feel better. The point is that if we have a bad situation, but we reframe it in a positive way, say somehow something good will come out of this, we actually feel better. It isn't just being naive. We're choosing to feel better. Now, I say there's a mitzvah, right? Again, the same thing as a mitzvah to light Shabbos candles, it's a rabbinical mitzvah, and then there's a mitzvah to give mishloach manos in Purim. Those are rabbinical mitzvahs. There's a rabbinical mitzvah to say the words, gam zu l'tova. Right? Isn't just a nice thing you heard Uncle Moshe? It's an actual mitzvah to say gam zu l'tova. Meaning, gam zu l'tova means gam zu, even this l'tova will lead to a good thing. Which means even this thing, which apparently, ostensibly, appears to be a negative thing, somehow will lead to a good thing. This person insulted me in the store. Now my impulse is to be insulted or to have a bad day. But if I say the words, if I say gam zu l'tova, I say it sincerely, I actually start to feel better. And again, of course, it's a great mitzvah. But also even more significantly, right, when I realize, somehow this will lead to a good thing. Somehow I will become better. I'll become healthier. I'll become less sensitive. I'll be able to teach the person how to respond. Maybe I'll make an impression for other people. We don't know how. Somehow this situation will lead to a good thing. And again, this is one of the bases of our emunah, that nothing is random. So there's a reason for it. And we, again, this is in our interest. We can either choose to become victimized, or we can say, you know what? I'll look at it in a positive way and feel better about it and get this mitzvah of bitachon at the same time. So that's G. So that's grief. Grief. And again, it really pulls all these ideas together. Grief again. So G, Gamzul Tova, R, repeat, don't repeat it. I, don't interpret, don't try to interpret what they're thinking. E is esteem. F is try to judge favorably. Maybe something's going on. Maybe the person's in pain. Maybe he misunderstood what he said. Any questions at all? Any questions? We're good? You have a question you wanted to ask? Okay, great. Nothing? We're good? Okay. Fine. So I want to share with you a beautiful story. Beautiful story from also about Rav Kook. So this story comes from the book of Rabbi Levine called The Tzaddik in Our Times. So as you mentioned, Rabbi Kook was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, and he was opposed by today was called the Natura Karta. So the Natura Karta, they bitterly opposed him, and they would vilify him in posters and other ways, but Rabbi Kook, although it was painful, but he didn't make it into an argument. One time, the leader of the Natura Karta, his daughter had a terrible, terrible illness, and the doctors examined her, and the conclusion was that she had to be sent to a hospital in Europe, and this certain Jewish professor was the world's greatest specialist in this field, and he's the only one that can cure this Natura Karta's daughter. So this rabbi made inquiries, and number one, the doctor was extremely busy, and it's very, very, very unlikely that he'll make time for her. And number two, it'll cost an enormous amount of money. So he was a bit stuck. He really couldn't afford the fee, and couldn't afford the transportation. He couldn't even get an appointment. So he didn't know what to do. So he knew though that Rabbi Ari Levine was very close to Rabbi Kook, and he also knew that this doctor was a very good great admirer of Rav Kook. So with great shame and remorse, he went to Rabbi Ari Levine and told him, he asked Rabbi Levine, would you please approach Rabbi Kook and beg him for a letter, if you can please write a letter to his professor, if you would take in his daughter, to see his daughter. He said, I can't go myself because I would die of shame if I go myself. But perhaps if you can go to him, if you can approach him, perhaps you could do it. So Rabbi Levine was really excited to be able to be this go-between to this great mitzvah, and he went to Rav Kook, and Rav Kook readily agreed. He said, of course I'll write the letter. Of course I'll help this person. And so he said, but What about the fact that, you know, that this person has been your opponent, that he's been so abusive, so mean? He said, what does the difference of opinion have to do with his daughter? Right? So he took a pen and paper and wrote the letter carefully and read it over, and he made it very clear that it was a glowing letter. It was you know, there wasn't any hint of resistance or resentment at all in the letter. So Rabbi Levine was really excited, got this letter. He's so excited to be able to be this emissary, to be able to help this person. He's walking out. As he's walking out, he sees two important Zionist leaders walking into the room. And he knew, if these leaders knew what he was about to do, maybe help this new Tour Karatzi leader, there's no way they're gonna let it fly. But he was hoping, praying in his mind, please, I hope Cook doesn't tell them what happened. So he walks out. And 2 minutes later, here's a cook calling out, "All right, come back!" And Arvin is frozen, not sure what to do. He knows if he goes back, he's not gonna be able to get the letter. He's thinking, should I ignore him? Should I pretend I didn't hear him? Should I just run away? Should I run the letter? He's not sure. He said, "How can I ignore my teacher?"
He had not given him the letter yet.
Right? He was holding it, and he was about to travel to the new Tour Guide leader. And he's not sure if he should ignore the cook. He's not sure. He's torn. He says, "How could I ignore my teacher?" Turns back and he assumes for sure these people convince him to take back the letter. And Rav Cook said with a great smile, he says, "Aryeh, I forgot one thing. This will cost a lot of money for transportation. I'm very close to the head of the shipping line. Please take this letter also and give it to them and tell them it'll be on me. You know, tell them this big discounts, and this will be able to cover the transportation costs." Right, so this is a story about how somebody's able to transcends, nothing to take things personally, he's able to transcend that and be able to, for the sake of shalom and for the sake of bringing peace to the world, was able to exhibit these mitzvahs. Okay. Fine. So. Okay. So the next mitzvah is. Yes, where are you? These are, I think perhaps mitzvah of not holding a grudge is perhaps among the most difficult mitzvahs in the entire Torah. Much more difficult than keeping kosher. Much more difficult than keeping Shabbos. Not holding a grudge is something that's right. It's in our kishkas, right? It's visceral. It's almost instinctive. So I'm certainly sympathetic and I certainly relate that this is among the most difficult mitzvahs. At the same time, I think that it really relates to how we reframe it. Often things pain us very much because we either repeat them over and over again. You know, we don't let go of it, right? Or we see it as bigger than it really is. Often in the big picture. In the big picture of things, in the big picture of, you know, looking back 20 years, and the picture, you know, the big picture of how much we could accomplish by letting things go versus how much we actually gain by continuing the fight, which is nothing. But seeing the big picture, if you see things in context, often we realize that we have so much more to gain by letting things go than to continue it. You know, it certainly helps to say that if you don't like somebody and you daven for them, you actually pray for them, it actually helps to alleviate your negative feelings towards them. You know, but if you pray for them, they should be able to turn and do tshuva and apologize. It actually helps to alleviate your pain. Okay, so there's a few, you know, a few nuggets that I could share. You make sense?
Still amateur, I
know. Yeah. Okay. And sure. Yeah, we're all human. We're all human. But again, that's also one important thing is to realize that it's never zero sum. That every millimeter that we able to advance in terms of being less, you know, less bitter about something and be a little more forgiving, even if it's a tiny bit, that's an enormous accomplishment. It's never all or nothing. Every little bit is extremely valuable. Okay, let's go on. So let's jump ahead to the new mitzvah really from this, what's today's schedule. So there's a mitzvah. Torah says the have this, you should love the ger. Now, what does the word ger mean? What does ger mean?
Stranger.
Stranger. What's a stranger? What does a stranger mean? What's a ger? What does the Torah mean? Says it say love the ger. What's the Torah saying?
Convert.
Right? Convert. Does it mean anything else? Okay, fine. It says you should love the ger. Why? Because you were gerim in Mitzrayim. Were we converts in Mitzrayim? Well, we were immigrants. We were aliens, right? We were
undocumented
aliens, right? Right. So our sages say that ger certainly means converts. Ger also means an immigrant, right? So the point is there's a mitzvah, of course, to love every single Jew, to chesed every single Jew, to chesed to all people, right? But there's a particular emphasis. If somebody is a ger, mean either somebody who's a Jewish convert, or somebody who moved from another city. A ger doesn't have to mean person who came from Russia or from Iran or from South America. A ger means somebody who's from another city. You know, there's a mitzvah therefore to reach out, and put extra emphasis in making sure that they feel comfortable and are more settled. Well, now why? Why does the Torah want us to put emphasis on a ger and an immigrant? What's the reason why the Torah wants us to do this? What do you say? What's the lesson of this book? Okay, good. Excellent. What else? Yes, Thomas.
We also commonly lump together with widows
and orphans. Okay, excellent. What's the common
noun? Vulnerable population.
Excellent. So it's the idea that they're more vulnerable. How's an immigrant more vulnerable?
Have a support system that people are living.
Excellent. So on one level, it shows that if you're only kind to people that are like you, or people that are established and secure and they have healthy, successful lives, then on a certain level, it doesn't demonstrate that you're doing it because of kindness. You're doing it because you want them to appreciate it. You want them to appreciate it and reciprocate. But if you do acts of kindness to somebody that can't necessarily reciprocate or show appreciation, or they can be appreciated but they can't reciprocate, then that shows that it's really coming from a truly kind place. Right? It's a much more genuine act of kindness. It's similar to what I say that doing an act of kindness to someone who's dead is the greatest act of kindness because they can't pay back. The person is more vulnerable and they're less influential. Then that shows it's much more sincere. Therefore we should, our sages teach that we should look out for the people that are neduf, people that are misfortunate for whatever reason. We should look out for them and try our best to make sure they're comfortable. We should be kind to everybody, but particularly look out for those who are neduf, people who are down, who have difficulties, who have misfortune, or people that are feeling vulnerable, because they moved. So I want to share with you some beautiful stories about this mitzvah about the mitzvah of loving the ger. So as I mentioned, it also refers to converts. Our sages say that the Gemara says that kasha gerim kisapachas, that a ger is difficult for the Jewish people as tzaraas. What is this supposed to mean? So Tosos there says what it means is that in certain aspects, when a person is a ger. They demonstrate this enormous spiritual growth and leap that it makes everyone else look bad, right? Basically, when a person who is a ger who grew up in a non-Jewish environment and makes tears so many social connections in order to have a relationship with Hashem, then they go through so many difficulties just to have a relationship with Hashem. How do we measure up? So that's what Tosafot says that means that a ger is such a high level that it's hard for us to reach up to, and therefore makes us all look bad. So the following is a fascinating story. It comes from the book Touch by a Story, Volume 2, about a fascinating story about a ger. So in the Nitro Yeshiva in New York, Yom Kippur was just over, And so the whole yeshiva had a kippur, and they went through all the Elul, went through Rosh Hashanah, through Teshuvah, and we know Yom Kippur was this apex of this the spiritual journey, and so we know that the Yom Kippur is supposed to fill us with this purity and cleanses us. So one of the students in yeshiva turned to Rabbi Yonah Forst. And says, Rabbi, how do we know that, or Yom Kippur, how do we know that we were actually, our prayers were accepted? How do we know that we are cleansed on Yom Kippur? How do I know that all that I've done is now cleansed? So he said, my dear student, let me tell you a story. When I was younger, I was on a cattle car. We rounded up by the Nazis. I was on a cattle car to Treblinka. And where the cattle cars, it's dark, it's packed, you could barely breathe. And there's one person, we're all Jewish, one person though, who spoke Yiddish with a funny accent. He was tall, he was blonde, and he had very, very handsome features. And he was with us, and he just stood out.
He was heavenly white?
He stood out, he had very handsome features, he stood out, he didn't look like everyone else. So I started speaking to him, and he told me a story. He says, I grew up a German man. I grew up in the suburbs of Berlin, and I converted to Judaism. So I asked him. Rabbi Forst says, I asked him, how did you convert to Judaism? After Hitler came to power, there's been all this propaganda against Jews for the past 10 years. Why do you convert to Judaism now? He said, I'll tell you. So one night I was walking in my hometown in Germany, and I walked past the shul, and I heard these beautiful voices of people praying and singing, and I stopped to listen, and there was this beautiful singing, beautiful prayers, and then everyone walked out in their white clothes, and their faces were glowing. And they started to do, I didn't know what it was then, started to do the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana. And they looked and sounded like angels. They started to say Kiddush Levana, and eventually they danced in a circle, and I couldn't stop looking at them, and then I asked somebody what they're doing. And the person was very kind to me. He said basically today was Yom Kippur. Today's the day in which we reconcile with each other and with Hashem, and we purify all of our misdeeds, and we're doing Kiddush Levana. Kiddush Levana means that we yearn to be like the moon. If we turn towards the light, we will. See a success of brightness and greatness, and we want to be like the moon that turns towards the light. So I was so taken back by this scene that I resolved then that I would like to learn more, and I promised myself that I want to become part of this holy nation, and I started to convert. Had a girlfriend that I was with, and I started to convert, and the war started, and my family encouraged me to join them and save myself. But I told them, no, I refuse to leave my people. And I converted after the war started. And he said, that is why I'm privileged to be here with you, with all these pure souls in this cattle car. Right? I'm privileged to be a part of the holy nation, right? We're willing to give everything for the sake of our relationship with Hashem, for the sake of bringing holiness into the world. A few hours later, this fellow arrived at Treblinka, and presumably he was killed with his fellow Jews. So first turned to his brother and said, that non-Jew was able to see the holiness on a Jewish face at the Yom Kippur. He's able to perceive that, and that inspired him to become Jewish. That's why I had to give everything up to have a relationship with Hashem. If only you could see the glow of Kedusha that comes out of a Jewish face after Yom Kippur, you would have no question, right, how we were impacted by Yom Kippur. Okay, right, so the point of the story is that we have to realize that as Jews, we have to realize we make this enormous impression in the world. We spread so much light to the world, and basically by us acting as ambassadors, right, as ambassadors for holiness. So, saying that the ambassador of Denmark, the ambassador of China, they dress and act and speak in a way that represents their country. We dress and act and speak in a way that represents godliness. Therefore, we have to realize that whatever we do, we have this the enormous responsibility to be an ambassador of holiness. And indeed, when we do mitzvahs, we actually have this, we emanate, we don't see it, but we actually spread this enormous spiritual light into the world. We drop down to the world this enormous shefa. And therefore, doing that, right, we can attract the sparks of holiness among the nations of the world. And when a person does become a ger, we have to realize how much they've come. They've come so far. We have to show enormous respect for that. And we have to love them and cherish and respect them and make sure they feel truly welcome to be part of Klal Yisrael. Okay, thank you all so much. So I think next week we're not on. I think we're skipping. Are we skipping next week?
We skipped the 26th.
So next week we're on. So yeah. Next week.